What is Rated LGBT Radio, starring your host, Rob Watson.
Good evening, and welcome to Rated LGBT Radio. And I am your host, Rob Watson. And tonight we have another important, relevant, insightful show. We are going to be talking about transphobia in the military. We're going to catch you up with the latest happenings of what is going on there. We are going to actually highlight something that may be under a lot of people's radar, which is the fact that two very important organizations, OutServe SLDN and the American Military Partner Association, have merged, and they have become a united front called the Modern Military Association of America. And as our special guest tonight, we have Andy Blevins, who is the executive director, and he will be talking everything military, LGBTQ, trans ban. He's going to give us the latest scoop across the board, including a bill that has been introduced in the House of Representatives that is not going to solve the transgender issues in the military by any means, but hopefully to do something to rectify some injustices there and take care of some folks. We're also going to talk about some of the political news of the day and other little factoids of things going on. And with that, I'd like to welcome onto the show my dear, beloved co-host. What's your name? Brody Levesque.
What's my name? Thank you, Rob.
You're welcome, Brody. So what in the world is going on?
You know, I'll be perfectly honest with you. The word chaos isn't even an accurate summation of the state of affairs in the world today, particularly if you are in the Washington, D.C. area. I have seen a lot of things in the 40 years that I've been a journalist, but I don't think anything has ever met the definitions of complete just nuts as the last 2 years with this administration and with the Republicans in general, and just the sorry state of affairs that your country now finds itself in. It's just, yeah.
Well, see, I have to tell you, I have seen this before. I do have expertise in this before because my children were in preschool before, and they did act like toddlers before, which is what I'm seeing out of Washington right now.
I without a doubt, I think the toddler in chief certainly made a big impression on everyone yesterday by throwing a temper tantrum and walking out of a meeting. He walks in and then he turns right around and pivots 3 minutes later, and he's out the door, and he's running out to, you know, my colleagues in the press corps who were already pre-assembled in the Rose Garden. You know, this was a staged press opportunity. He knew he was going to walk in. He knew he wasn't going to have the meeting, and he came running out to us to whine. So, and then, of course, today Speaker Pelosi took a couple of pot shots at him. There was a little bit of back and forth. The day
When he walked out to the Rose Garden, wasn't there like printed material or printed something out there that made it very obvious that the whole thing had been staged?
Oh no, absolutely. 100%. This was absolutely staged. This was absolutely a photo op for him to take a cheap shot at the Democrats. You know, he's made it very, very clear that further governance is just not going to happen, which historically, that's never happened before. Even during the Watergate proceedings and even going back 100-something years to the Johnson administration when they were impeaching President Johnson, Andrew Johnson. I'm sorry, I forget you guys had two Johnsons. The first Johnson back right after the Civil War.
Yes,
but
we are the country that has two Johnsons.
Yeah, you have two Johnsons.
We're the country
right,
that has two Johnsons.
Yeah. I'm leaving that alone. The other part of it was with Bill Clinton. You know, government. It kept going on. There was government. There was things happening. Not this time. This time everything is ground to a halt. Now I can't blame this all on the White House. Okay, it's just that wouldn't be fair. I'd like to be able to blame it on the White House, but I can't. In fairness, the other part of this odd marriage is Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, who has absolutely managed to grind the government to a halt. I mean, it's just the American government's constipated. And one of the reasons it's constipated is because of Mitch McConnell. So it's not just the White House doing it.
Right. And I will say, to be Pollyanna mm-hmm. on this, to bring in a little like Mr. Rosy Sunshine here, what is happening in a lot of areas of this is that the flaws in the system are being leveraged, but they're also being exposed. So while we have to get through this horrible period with the two horrible people that you just spoke about, my hope is that these things have been there forever, you know, in terms of the system, but they are now evident and they've now been pushed to be a problem, which is, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. So hopefully we're seeing these and there'll be room to grow. Anyway, I'm hopeful that we get a breaking point and that is what happens. Did you have more? Because I wanted to bring up something about the somebody else that's been going toe-to-toe with the president.
No, go ahead. I mean, we can cover the other two items in a second before we bring Andy on. Or actually,
well,
you know what? We'll talk to Andy about that, too, because it's kind of indirectly involved. But, yeah, go ahead.
Great. Yeah. So Mayor Pete has been, you know, he's kind of been the David going up the against the Trump Goliath, you know, and has brought up in a very personal way. And this does actually have something to do with Andy, which has to do with military service. And Mayor Pete went right to Trump's Achilles heel full of bone spurs. And his avoidance of the draft year out of serving, and to the point that Trump actually felt the need to, and of course, in the most condescending name-calling way possible, but to have to answer back. And I'm just wondering if this isn't kind of a Mayor Pete breakout moment.
I think that the mayor has there's a couple of facets to it. The first one is that he was asked the other day on Fox about abortion, and the answer that he gave was incredibly articulate. It was measured. It was a response of someone exuding a wisdom that you wouldn't necessarily find, quite frankly, in a 37-year-old. And it is like with everything else that I've noticed that he does, is that he is able to strike that chord. And we've seen a similarity and some parallels to this before, as recently as 2008, with a then largely unknown junior senator from Illinois running for the office. But I think what makes the dynamics of this one different, quite frankly, forget the right and their hang up on the sexual part of it because they're just out to lunch. It's just the fact that Pete isn't unique in terms of what one would expect. What makes him is unique has nothing at all to do with him being gay or being married to Jason or any of that. What makes him unique is that he absolutely can articulate ideas in such a way that makes it very easily understandable, and it touches the chords of what people really are thinking. He's got a good handle with voters and with the people in general. To wit, I saw something come out of that Fox television network Sunday morning program that I don't think I would have ever, quite frankly, imagined, given the vitriol and the rhetoric we've seen, especially out of that network over the last, 12 plus years or longer. But that Fox News audience gave the mayor a standing ovation. And the thing that I find interesting is that, Trump is like your schoolyard bully, Rob. He sits there and he'll throw any insult out there hoping that one or two will stick. But the problem is this time, he's up against an opponent who not only can debase his argument and just make him look even more foolish than he normally does, but absolutely be spot on before Trump has a chance to, shake the argument out of mid-brain to his lips, which is interesting. And he does it in such a way that he's not antagonistic about it. Politics has always been, rough and tumble, if you will. And, a lot of sometimes hard things get said. Pete's able to do something that I haven't seen done in a long time, and that's actually have a debate, a discussion, and discourse without patronizing anyone. And that's unusual.
No, yeah, exactly. And to that point, Trump's new spokesperson for his campaign, which is like bizarre that he needs yet another mouthpiece, and I don't remember her name off the top of my head, but her commentary back about Mayor Pete's comments were to basically describe the people who cared about what Mayor Pete was saying as extremists. And I actually think that's a tactical mistake on her part, because I don't think the things he is talking about are the things that even, extreme Democrats are worrying about. I think they're the things that speak to the middle of the road people, and her terming it as, especially going after the people who believe in that, I think she's making a Hillary Clinton mistake, where Hillary talked about the Trump base is being, I forget what she called them, degenerates or something like that. And that kind of came back to bite her. Deplorable. There you go.
The deplorable.
And I think this spokeswoman is going to kind of create the same thing. I don't think that's going to play. But anyway, that's my two cents on it.
No, I think you're right. The schoolyard bully in the gutter, quite frankly, New York mafioso attitude that the president displays constantly. And I've said this on this program before. I've actually said it on other programs that I've been an invited guest on. The Trump organization, and that includes Ivanka, Jared Kushner, Eric, his wife, Donald Jr., his wife, with the possible exception of the First Lady of the United States and probably the first son, Barron, it's an organized crime family. It basically, for all intents and purposes, is New York's sixth mafia family in the way it operates,
yeah,
and the way it treats people. And it's really, at the end of the day, if the government of the United States isn't able to impeach him or isn't able to get rid of him and the voters end up getting rid of him, I have full faith and confidence in the United States Attorney for the Southern District of New York to get this guy on RICO. he eventually will do a perp walk. I'm waiting for it. It's just unfortunately not going to happen anytime soon.
Right. Yeah. Well, the story will play out. Well, without further ado, let's bring on our guest for the evening. We'll talk about a lot more of relevant topics. Andy, welcome to the show.
Hey, Rob, thank you so much. Nice to talk to you again, Brody. Thanks for having me on.
Andy, it's always good to talk to you.
Our pleasure. Andy, let's start kind of the thing that Brody and I were talking about. You come from a strong representation of the heroes of our country, you know, the military, people who serve, people who have served, yourself included. What is your kind of gut feelings with this kind of leadership, especially with somebody who dodged the draft and then administration is turning around and kicking really viable people out of the service? What's just kind of your gut feeling around all that?
It's a real shame. I think the government of this country is not only doing a disservice to the individuals that they're kicking out of the military, but they're doing a disservice to the country as a whole too. We're removing capable individuals that have already been trained in these positions and are, you know, supporting national security through their roles in achieving the mission. And we're having to retrain new people to take up those duties who might not be as qualified as these trans folks that we're kicking out. It's a real shame. I was discharged under Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and I'm the spouse of a trans veteran. So seeing my trans siblings in arms go through like a Don't Ask, Don't Tell 2.0 that is worse than Don't Ask, Don't Tell, in my opinion, is just heartbreaking.
Yeah, the whole scenario from Don't Ask, Don't Tell to our transgender service members who are being attacked is it's heartbreaking on a personal level. It's unjust on just a, here you have a historic group of people who are stepping up to defend the country in the most ultimate way and being completely disrespected and disregarded. But even just in a pragmatic way, I remember under Don't Ask, Don't Tell, we had incredibly talented linguistics and people who spoke Arabic and were vitally important being thrown out because of their sexual orientation, which was just insane, strategically insane. It's mind-numbing how awful this policy is for absolutely zero good benefit. I want to ask you about the two organizations, what their structure was and what is happening now under your leadership in a combined organization.
Yeah, that's a great question. So prior to the merger, I served as the executive director of OutServe SLDN, which was actually the product of a merger between OutServe and the Service Members Legal Defense Network. Historically, OutServe SLDN really focused on the service members, combating discrimination within the DOD that was rooted in LGBTQ bias and bias on seroconversion for HIV positive folks. And then the American Military Partner Association was really rooted in honoring the spouses and the families of those that were actively serving in the LGBTQ community, excuse me. We worked together a lot over the past couple of years. So this merger was, it just felt like it was the right time. You know, we're combating all this awful stuff from the White House. We're charging forward to make sure that our membership can continue serving openly and authentically, and that they're honored post service. So this new organization, Modern Military Association of America, which I also serve as the executive director for, really looks at the whole holistic community. We're looking at the LGBTQ service members, the veterans, their families, their caregivers. We just want to make sure that they're all honored, they're all supported, and they can do what they do for the country openly.
I think it's a smart thing. Go ahead, Brody.
Well, one of the things that, I don't think that people realize is that, and not to detract from their missions, but when people think in terms of the day-to-day grind in these fights for the rights for not only our service people, but the spouses of our service people, and again, specific to, you know, LGBTQI people, and that, you know, a lot of times they expect us to be, you know, the probane of the larger equality organization such as the Human Rights Campaign, and that's simply not true. I think that, you know, a lot of credit has got to be given to the folks that have been in the trenches throughout all of these fights, particularly with the trans military ban. And Rob, you know, we've had Andy's predecessor on the show, Matt Thorne, who was running out before Andy took it over. And I've had the great honor to interview Aubrey Sarvis and some of the other folks from back in the day during the time frame of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And one of the things that I'm, you know, firmly committed to is pushing these organizations and making sure that they're highly visible and that they get the support, not just only from the community, but they get, you know, the support from the allies. You know, as we press forward into the next, you know, into the next hour here as we talk about this, one of the things that I do want to talk to Andy about, because it's of concern to me, and of course you're married to a trans vet, but we do need to talk about the veterans too, as well as the service mm-hmm. folk, because we have a situation now where Health and Human Services, as of tomorrow, is going to roll back a section of the Affordable Care Act, which is going to basically remove non-discrimination protections for about 1.3 to 1.5 million transgender folks, okay? And at least 1.4 million of those are adults, and many of them are veterans. On top of that, we just had the Housing and Urban Development folks remove protections for discriminatory practices for the homeless. And as you know, Andy, we have a lot of homeless vets, and we do have a lot of trans homeless vets. And so this directly mm-hmm. impacts us. It's not just, you know, our current fight with keeping our folks, like my good friends Blake Drenham and Staff Sergeant Logan Ireland and Captain Pierce and the rest of them, but I think we also need to also take a harder look at, you know, the veterans and those that have put on the uniform of your country and have fought for your country. And then they come back and they're, you know, it's bad enough, you know, we're going to have some of these trans folks getting kicked out because of this onerous ban. But now that they are in a veteran status, you know, if something happens, they're not going to be able to have their health care, or they're not going to be able to, if they go homeless, God forbid, they're going to be denied shelter in certain places because of these discriminatory practices. So for our listeners, one of the things that I would very much like all of you to keep in mind is that Andy and his organization, you know, their mission is pretty broad and far ranging. There's a lot of issues that are on their plate, and that also includes the veterans issues. And, you know, these folks don't operate on a song and a prayer, and they do need your help. And I'm going to ask you guys right now, unashamedly, you know, write those checks. Do your PayPals, do your credit cards, do whatever it takes, a United campaign for the federal thing. But, you know, let's give these folks some support. And with that, I'm going to throw it back to Rob. But, Andy, I do want to talk a little bit about vets and coming up with these two things being rolled back, because this will affect your organization as well as everybody else.
Certainly, yeah. And thank you so much for those kind words, Brody.
So, Andy, also want to ask you about a new bill that was just introduced that would ensure that service members discharged under the trans ban policy are eligible for care from the Department of Veterans Affairs. Representative Kennedy, I'm going to read his quote about this bill: "The bias and bigotry of this president should not be used to deny health care to any LGBTQ veteran who has served this nation. By passing the SERV Act, we will protect transgender veterans until the day we overturn this cruel, misguided ban on transgender troops." Can you give us some more detail about the bill and what's going on with that?
Yeah, of course. It was such a pleasure to work with Congressman Pappas on this bill. So one of the biggest programs that we have here at MMAA, I almost said out, sir, at MMAA, is helping to upgrade folks' discharges that were kicked out for biases that were rooted in their sexual orientation, gender identity, and serostatus. Unfortunately, a lot of those folks receive less than honorable discharges, and they're kicked out before they reach a certain amount of time. And veterans' benefits are tied to 24 months of service and an honorable discharge. So this bill will make it so that if we can prove that these veterans were kicked out because of this unwarranted bias rooted in their identities or their serostatus, we don't have to go through the steps of a discharge upgrade, which can take up to 24 months right now. We can just immediately start getting them those needed benefits that they need right now.
Excellent. And the people that fall under that umbrella are people that were kicked out during Don't Ask, Don't Tell, HIV positive service members, and transgender. Is that correct?
Yeah, it also includes folks that were kicked out before Don't Ask, Don't Tell. So under those predecessor policies, we really wanted to ensure
right.
that this was as broad as possible to catch as many members of our community as we could.
Excellent. And what are go ahead, Bernie.
No, that's all right. Go ahead and ask your question. I just had another thought here. I do that.
Well, no. Go for your thought. Your thought is probably better than my question.
Yeah. Andy, as we're looking at this, and and especially since Representative Kennedy has become such a very strong advocate for the trans community in particular, how do we get across? And I say this as a member of the media. How do we get across to my colleagues, the impact of these stories? I mean, some of these stories, and I've heard them, they're horrific besides being said. We're looking, for example, that without passage of this bill and without these protections being put into place, you know, the disenfranchisement of a lot of these folks is going to get greater, and particularly, with our trans community and our trans service members, that are suddenly, cut out because of this hateful policy, and now they find themselves out of uniform and trying to struggle. We're already experiencing very, very, very high suicide rates as it is across the board in all five services. But in terms of veterans, directly related to combat-related post-traumatic stress or other issues. And what concerns me, what really concerns me, is that, if this bill does not get passed, we're looking at probably higher rates even still because of the trans service, because not only have you taken away their career and their job, but you've taken away their very sense of identity that made them who they were. But talk about that for a minute.
Yeah, I think that really falls in line with what I said when I went with members of Congress when I was lobbying for the Equality Act too. The Equality Act really did help ensure that my constituents, my members that were kicked out because of their identity, could not lose their job or their home as a civilian or a veteran. And that really falls in line with what you're talking about. Military service is not a partisan issue. It should never be a partisan issue. These individuals are able, willing, and qualified to serve in the military. Every single major national health organization has proven time and again that the unbiased and unwarranted issues that the Trump-Pence administration is bringing up should not prevent them from being able to serve openly and authentically. And our job as a nation is to ensure that we support those veterans after their military service. They served us. Now it's time that we need to continue serving them. And that's what this bill really helps to ensure that this Congress does. So it is imperative that we pass this, because if we don't, we're letting our veterans down and our nation down.
Okay.
Yeah. Andy, I want to go back. I want to go back in time a little bit and just get your perspective on this. When marriage equality passed, after that happened, there were big organizational changes in the activist community. I mean, we had organizations that simply felt like they had done their job. They closed up and off they went. Yeah. After Don't Ask, Don't Tell passed or was completed, and the military seemed safe for LGBTQ people across the board, and before we were blindsided by Trump actually being elected, was there kind of that similar thing happening within the kind of the OutServe and other activist organizations of, you know, we're kind of at our end game? And was all this kind of blindsiding, or was there a continuum that you guys were already building on?
That's a great question. There were a lot of those similar sentiments after Don't Ask, Don't Tell was repealed, and after the Defense of Marriage Act was repealed. People assumed that the mission was accomplished after we changed the regulation. Unfortunately, that's not true, which we learned after Don't Ask, Don't Tell was repealed and after Section 3 of DOMA was repealed. We're preparing right now for those follow-on plans. We're positioning ourselves to make sure that we can not only change the conversation on the ground level, but we can start to change the culture both within the DOD and the VA and outside of it as well. Because we can change the regulations, but that's just the beginning. We need to make sure that these folks don't experience that harassment and discrimination after we change those rules.
Discrimination, because one of the things that has come across since Don't Ask, Don't Tell went away was, you know, a lot of the stories, especially the testimonies of serving transgender folks, is that many of them, when they come out, find support in their units, and a lot of the fear of, you know, creating division and everything else hasn't happened. A lot of LGBT people also, or LGB people also report, you know, that kind of thing. Where is discrimination still being felt in the service itself?
Yeah, that's a great question. We have heard a lot of great success stories, and by and large, the DOD community has been very welcoming of Open Trans Service, which is wonderful to hear. There are still a few problematic stories that we've heard as well. Unfortunately, I can't get too much into it. For example, in 2015, our legal help desk had about 75 clients, excuse me. Last year, we had 600 clients, and the majority of those cases are discrimination and harassment cases. So those are folks that are actively serving. Those are veterans trying to access their benefits, either whether that's through the VA or some civilian sector. And those are military spouses and kids of service members that are being discriminated against as well.
The one thing we've seen in the American society since Trump took office was a kind of dog whistle and license for bigotry and, you know, cisgender, white supremacy, and all of those kind of negative things that people probably held but were a little bit rightly ashamed to make public, and they now feel this freedom to express themselves in that way. Is that part of what's contributing to this increase in the cases you're seeing, do you think?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. Within the DOD and the VA, we foster a very specific sense of what a veteran is and what a service member is. You know, it's that white, middle-aged, middle-class man married to a woman with 2.5 kids and a white picket fence. A veteran is somebody that went to the sandbox and, you know, served at least one tour of duty and, So a lot of the folks, especially in the LGBTQ and HIV positive community, don't necessarily fit into that category. So when they try and go access these benefits, folks look at them and say, well, you're not really a service member. You're not really a veteran. And that's kind of how it starts to snowball.
Let's for a second. I'm going to kind of dovetail my question to this discussion you guys just had, and I'm going to go back to what I started to say, the elephant in the room, this piece of legislation. Now let's talk the U.S. Senate. Let's talk Mitch McConnell. Andy, come on. I spent a good portion of my career in that town. Thankfully, I haven't been there for couple, 3 years now, and I don't miss it, to be honest with you. Looking at the current makeup of the Senate, looking at the administration, I've heard folks talking about passage and putting this bill through the House. It's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Is this really a case of you folks are going to be making all the motions and going through the motions, but there's nothing going to happen because of McConnell until 2020 and possibly even beyond if he retains his seat and the Republicans retain control of the upper body? Have you guys talked out the strategy of how this could happen if that was the case?
Yeah, we have, and we have some pretty strong colleagues from both sides of the aisle in the Senate that are helping us with those conversations as well. It really gets back to proving to Mitch McConnell and his colleagues that this, again, is not a partisan issue. It's their duty as members of Congress to support our veterans, and they're not doing that right now. So I frequently bring our trans service members, our positive service members, to the Hill to speak one-on-one with members of Congress, because I think that's the best way to show them that this is not a partisan issue, when they can meet with one of their constituents that is negatively impacted. And that's what we're going to continue doing. We're going to keep bringing folks, having those conversations, and showing them that this is legislation they need to get behind. Quick little anecdote. The very first time that I brought some trans service members to the Hill, we were actually able to flip two very prominent Republican members of Congress that were completely opposed to our issue within the first 15 minutes of the conversation. So these talks, these private chats, are really the way that we need to continue moving forward if we want to push this through.
Let me do a follow before Rob jumps in. Okay.
Sure.
I know Logan. I know Blake. I'm deeply honored to know both of them. I have a lot of other trans service folks that I know. It's relatively easy for me to even forget that they are trans, because my perception is not that, okay? And so
right.
It makes sense to me, okay, especially Logan, and you know Logan. He's fairly impressive. Okay. The type of person that you don't want to piss off or meet in a dark alley someplace. But, I mean, it's a situation where, you know, these folks are wearing the uniform. They're doing their job. They just want to be able to do their job. You've got a person sitting across a desk from you who absolutely is rigid and what over, and I'll call it for what it is. In most cases, it has to do with that rather peculiar form of Pentecostal, evangelical, whatever you want to call it that they believe in. How do you get them to see them for what they really are? I mean, outside of the fact that you have someone like Logan sitting across the desk from you, it's, you know, I mean, seriously, what's your best approach with that?
You know, that's a great question. And when I first brought these folks to the Hill, I was honestly worried that they were going to be met with cold, hard individuals that denied their existence, even though they were sitting across from them. However, that's not the experience that we've had. Even when meeting with members of Congress that are staunchly opposed to open and authentic trans service, those conversations were warm. They asked questions. They had an actual conversation. They shook hands after the fact. They followed up with these trans service members. And I think the important part of those conversations, even if we didn't flip them at that point, was we showed them that these trans service members are not the boogeymen like Trump and Pence are trying to push. These are actual folks that are doing a good job, and they should have the opportunity to continue doing that.
Agreed. Boy, 1,000%. Yeah. Get on the desk, start screaming, yelling, and screaming and waving the flag. Agreed. Yes.
I appreciate that they're being treated in an appropriately dignified way, and I would be appalled if it was otherwise. I kind of want to go a little bit big picture, Andy, on the military in general, because, you know, we're fighting for those who want to serve to be able to get everything that they deserve by serving, by having had served. But in the big world of the military, it's still being led by this person who is a little bit unhinged, and I'm being very generous in the little bit. What is your view of what is being asked of the military in general across the globe right now?
That's a very large question.
That's okay. We've got a few minutes.
Without getting too political, because I'm only a 501c3, I'm disappointed in the way that this commander-in-chief is really using our military as pawns in order to boost his own ego. And that's exactly how I look at it. Every time I turn on the news or see something about things that are happening overseas, I feel like we're backtracking 5 years every week. You know, we've made significant strides, significant progress with the last few administrations. And I feel like Trump sees it as his goal to tear all of that down. It's frustrating as a veteran and as an executive director that's really representing, you know, 75,000 of my members throughout the world.
Well said, and I agree. I also want to ask you about another. I mean, we've talked about and obviously, rightly so, because they are on the front end of the vitriol of this administration. Women's issues in the military have been pretty predominant as well, and I have to believe that our lesbian service members experience a great deal of that. What specific women's issues do you deal with in particular?
Yeah, we have a lot of our members that really want to get into some of those MOSs, some of those rates or jobs that were just recently opened to females. A lot of them experience a lot of harassment. And I mean, there's a lot of folks out there that support it, don't get me wrong. But we do hear stories of some harassment and some discrimination for those folks that are trying to go through those schools as well. And it's really disheartening because folks are looking at genitalia and thinking that a person that has a penis can somehow do the job or go through the course better than a person that has a vagina. It's awful that we're in that backtracked mindset where we're not willing to look at what the individual can achieve or accomplish. We just want to look at what we're able to see on the outside.
Right.
Andy, let me throw something else in. Yeah, I've got another question since we're on that subject. Actually, let's go parallel to it. Let's talk about trans men serving in the U.S. military. They're still there. Let's talk about sexual assault. And now let's talk about their station at Maxwell Air Force Base in Montgomery, Alabama. You see where I'm headed?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, so what do we do?
Wait, Brody, I don't see where you're headed. Can you elaborate on that a little bit more?
Certainly. Alabama just passed probably the most restrictive abortion ban in the United States. These abortion bans, all of them, okay, affect more than just our cisgender women. They affect our lesbians, and they affect our trans men. So my question to Andy is, if we have a member of the United States Air Force who's a trans man who is sexually assaulted and becomes pregnant, okay, and he hasn't had his corrective gender surgery or bottom surgery, I think is the common vernacular for it. All right. Now we're in Alabama where abortion is illegal. Okay, now we have two things. First, we've got sexual assault, and then we've got the abortion thing, which does affect trans men. So, you know, Andy, where do we go?
You know, Brody, I'm really glad you asked that question. I don't have a solid answer, unfortunately. That's something we haven't really figured out how to navigate yet because it's so new. But I love that you drew awareness to the fact that abortions don't just affect women. Trans men are certainly affected as well. And I think it does the community a disservice when we don't open that narrative up to include them.
I think we have to. I think that we have to be aware of the fact that, you know, the LGBTQI community does not, you know, live or populate a cabbage patch. You know, there is a real world effect here. You and I both know that they statistically, all right, sexual assault in the U.S. Armed Forces has drastically increased. Now, the Christian right would, of course, like to blame that on don't ask, don't tell, which we know is just simply not true. But unfortunately, right. we also know that we have had, you know, at least two or three, you know, trans service members who have, in fact, been sexually assaulted. Now, suddenly, coupled with these abortion bans and some of this other legislative insanity, you know, we have to be, I think, consciously aware that this affects our community just as much as it does the cisgender community. And particularly in your case, because some of these people, some of these trans guys are wearing military uniforms.
Yeah. And they don't get to pick where they're stationed either. So the rules that are being established for them in the communities that they're being forced to live in are drastically affecting their lives and their quality of life.
And I think that we need to... specialize that. Go ahead, Rob. Sorry. I was preaching.
Yeah. To that point, and this is coming from my background as a military brat, but wouldn't they at least have some safety net in that the military, they would have military facilities they would be going to rather than the civilian ones? And would those military facilities be under that same Alabama rule? Or are they separate, being a military facility?
So that's a great question too, and it varies largely. So are we talking about a VA facility? Is that facility federal or is it state? Is it contracted out? There's a lot of variables that go into play there. I think there would be an instance where we could certainly get that needed care for, you know, the cisgender woman or the transgender man. That they need and kind of go in through those loopholes. But there's certainly going to be a lot of cases where we wouldn't be able to as well.
Yeah. I want to switch a little bit back to what we were talking about earlier before you came on, Andy. Mayor Pete is making inroads in the Democratic side in the pack of all the horde that are running for president. And he seems to be... part of his appeal is the fact that he's a veteran, you know, and that seems to break through for a lot of Americans who might otherwise have, you know, some homophobic or transphobic bias. When somebody is a veteran, a lot of times that does, pardon the expression, trump other biases because of just the sheer respect over somebody serving. What are your feelings about this gay man, veteran, running and how he's representing himself?
I love Mayor Pete. I'm not going to lie. I probably shouldn't be saying that. But his husband followed me on Twitter the other day and I fangirled for like 45 minutes. I think, yeah, my husband was very tired of it after like 5 minutes. I love the way he's carrying himself. He has this poise with the way that he speaks and the way that he brings in his life experiences that I haven't seen since Barack Obama, to be frank. I think Brody mentioned this actually. He never talks down to anybody. I watched this. I don't remember what station it was on. He answered a question for a little girl about bullies. And just the way he answered that question, he made sure that not only the little girl understood what he was saying, but the 60-year-old, you know, Trump supporter that was also in the audience understood it. And he also got goosebumps. He just feels great to me. And I love that the fact that he's a veteran and the fact that he's gay isn't the most interesting thing about him.
Right.
I'd have to agree. I think that the fact that he has the ability to articulate complete ideas and without butchering English language, to me as a wordsmith, is always a plus. But I think also looking at it, you know, he has the ability to have a connection. And I think with one of the things that has been sorely lacking, and Andy had, you know, I remember when we were covering Don't Ask, Don't Tell, which has been almost, 9-10 years ago, that was one of the things that I always appreciated about the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Mike Mullen. If you'll remember during the Admiral's testimony to the Senate and even the interviews he did with my broadcast colleagues, I saw a lot of parallels to the way Mayor Pete, you know, all these years later were answering the same questions in the same fashion. I don't know if that's a trait of the Naval Academy or not, but apparently that seems to be, you know, at least a trait of the officer corps of the Navy, to which I will also, I will give a nod to former President Jimmy Carter, who is a former submariner. So, you know, something about the Navy, I guess, I don't know. Let me ask you
as a Navy veteran, I will gladly own all of that, yes.
You'll own all of that, okay. Well, I'm sure the folks over there at on the Point in Annapolis will be cheering that part of our broadcast on, along with certain friends of ours in the E-Ring. Let's talk a little bit about impact, and I wanted to return to the subject for a minute. I think that Papias's and Kennedy's bill is critically important. But what's the larger message that we really need to get out there? I mean, one of the things that I think is always such a tragedy is that we seem to have the flavor of the month and of the moment, and then suddenly when these guys are veteran back on the streets and they're standing in between, you know, on the midway between the traffic lanes there on K Street with a little cup asking for money, you know, or they're homeless there and you see them coming up out of the ground at Farragut Square underneath the VA building, which I always felt was seriously ironic anytime I saw that. You know, you come up out of the subway stop and you literally are coming up underneath the Veterans Administration building and there's homeless service people right there in front of you, vets, you know. And we're a block away from the White House, from Lafayette Square. What do we need to do? I mean, what should be part of the function here for us? And I'm talking about more than just the media. I mean, I'm talking about you folks as well.
Yeah, I know I'm being a dead horse here, but I think it comes down to sharing those stories, making it clear that the people that we have vowed to serve as a country because of their service to this nation, we're not achieving that goal like we promised. And these people's lives, you know, people are literally dying because of that. So making that clear, putting a face to the cause, a voice to the cause, so people can associate, you know, that individual in pain, that individual asking for money with these bills that are on Capitol Hill in it, so they can understand that importance. But also, and again, beating the dead horse, reminding people that this is not a partisan issue. This isn't Trump versus, you know, Pelosi or Pelosi versus McConnell. These are service members and veterans. And I mean, it doesn't get more American than that.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah, Andy, and to that, I kind of want to go to the big fight, which is the fight against the trans ban itself. Two-part question. One is what are the next steps to derail that? Are we simply waiting for the next election, or is there something that is in the works to happen before that? But also as part of that, actually, I'll leave that question and then I'll ask the other one next.
Sure. So we're here at MMAA, we're looking at a few different avenues. We're looking at amendments to bills that are already out there. We're actively supporting both bills in the House of Representatives and in the Senate that are working to tear down that bill, but we're also working in the court system as well. So we have Karnofsky v. Trump, in which we're actively pushing back against the administration on this specific bill. And we're going to continue working on those three avenues until we do get open service.
Excellent. And my other part of the question is that one thing that's historically happened with the LGBTQ fight for the last few decades is, you know, through the worst times and the worst adversity we've hit, we collectively have fought through And the end result of each of those fights has been greater visibility, greater accessibility of the American public and, ma and pa, suburbia, getting to know us even more through each one. Every time we step out, they know us more and more as being part of them, from the AIDS mm-hmm. epidemic to marriage equality to, just every one of them. It's like we've become more and more. Is there a silver lining in the trans ban that this is going to make the transgender service person's story now visible and now more embraced by the average American who did not really even know they exist before this?
Ooh, I've never heard it framed that way before. I think you can draw a lot of parallels similar to Don't Ask, Don't Tell. A lot of people are now very cognizant of the fact that there are homosexual and bisexual service members that are actively serving because that ban was instituted. I'd like to say that there's a better way to do that than instituting a ban via Twitter. So hopefully, future presidents listening don't follow this same sort of methodology. But I think looking at it from an optimistic, positive point of view, when we achieve open service, 20 years down the line, we can say, I don't even want to say something good came from it, but yeah.
Okay. Well, and I hope it won't be 20 years down the line. I hope it'll be our pattern much quicker. Yeah. But we're down to our last few minutes here. You want to ask the final question there, Brody?
Yeah, actually, as we look at this year being the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall riots and things are happening, Andy, people want to pull out their checkbooks and give your folks a hand. Let's have your web address and how do people contribute to your fight.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much. Our web address is modernmilitary.org/donate. Super easy, modernmilitary.org/donate.
Is there anything that we forgot
Great.
To ask?
No. I would like to say thank you very much for having me, and thanks to all of the listeners that are interested in the fights that we're pushing forward. Our goal is to make sure that every able, willing, and qualified individual is able to serve openly and authentically, and we're not going to rest until we can make that happen.
Amen. Rob?
Excellent. Yeah, thank you so much, Andy, and welcome. You are welcome back here anytime. Thank you for everything you do across the board, and thank you for agreeing to come on with us tonight. Very, very deeply appreciated on all levels. I want to thank my co-host and our show producer, Brody Levesque, for all of his work here, plus all that he does on a daily basis. He is one of the most renowned journalists in the country and is part of helping us know what we know. And when we know it. Incredible work there. I want to thank our listeners for tuning in. We will be back here again next week, same time, same place. Be sure to tune in. Always important stuff from both the activist as well as the educational level. Hopefully we provoked thought and action on your part to get involved. Also, don't forget, out in Santa Cruz is Saturday nights at 7 p.m., 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And you can hear that on www.kfco.com. That's Saturday at 7 p.m. So for Brody and myself, thank you for listening to Radio LGBT Radio. Have a great week, and we will talk to you very soon.
You've been listening to Rated LGBT Radio!